speaker is Ray M.
My name is Ray Melbaum, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. I'm glad to be here and glad to be sober. It is truly an honor and a privilege to be asked to participate in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'd like to thank Charlie for asking me. Thank you very much, Charlie. You know, I go to a lot of AA meetings and hear a lot of people talk about remembering their first drink. I'm married to a lady in Alcoholics Anonymous, and she vividly remembers taking a drink at 12 years old, and you go to AA meetings, you'll hear that talked about, and talk about feelings changing, things happening, and so on. And I don't remember my first drink. First time I drank, I got drunk, I was 3 years old. I don't think I can remember 3 years old. I go to a lot of meetings. I don't know, the guy talking at our meeting quite a few months ago, and I'm amazed sometimes at what I hear from podiums. This guy's talking about remembering feelings at 2. And I thought, God damn it, I don't know what I felt like yesterday. And this guy remembers 40 years back. He had way too much therapy, you know. Just unbelievable. And I don't think I can remember 3, but I'll explain how I did. I was born and raised in a little coal mining town in Pennsylvania, in the anthracite coal region, the eastern part of Pennsylvania. And it was just my mom and I. My father got killed in the Second World War, and it was just my mom and I. And she's going to go drink with her girlfriends one night, and she couldn't get a babysitter. And she decided to take me along to the bar. And she took me to a little tavern up the street where they went to drink, and I'm in there running around. The guys at the bar thought it'd be fun to get the little kid drunk. They fed me highballs, and I got drunk. And I got drunk and staggered around, fell down and puked and did everything little drunks do. In fact, not a hell of a lot changed 30 years later on my last drunk. I just staggered around, fell down and puked a lot, you know, and not a lot of changes. And I don't think I can remember 3 years old. I really don't. But that story was told at every family get together from there on, and I heard it in great detail and knew all the details of it. And I also don't count that as the beginning of my drinking career, for Christ's sakes. I hear that sometimes. That people, you know, I took a sip of my dad's beer when I was 4, and that's when I was, you know, started my drinking career. Oh, give me a break, crying out loud. I mean, in my opinion, that's just kid experimental drinking and stuff like that. And before I go any further, I come from this Irish Catholic alcoholic family, and I don't think I'm an alcoholic because I came from that Irish Catholic alcoholic family. For years, I blame my conduct on my heritage, that I'm a drunk because I come from a family of drunks, and I'm arrogant because I'm German. I don't think that has anything to do with it. Because, I believe for me, I'm a product of my own self, that I would have been what I am no matter what. I just believe that. Because I know too many people in Alcoholics Anonymous come from real nice families. My wife came from a nice family, and they're non-alcoholic, non-Irish, and they're here too. So I'm a product of me. Because, you see, my mother's drinking didn't get me here, and my stepfather's drinking didn't get me here, and my aunts and uncles drinking didn't get me here. My drinking. Surprise, surprise, surprise. I know it's politically incorrect to take responsibility for your own actions today, but I'm going to do it. My drinking. And my actions. And my reactions and my attitudes to what got me to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the deal. It's that simple, you know. And like I say, there was a lot of drinking going on around our house, and it was just really no big deal. My mother drank a lot and got drunk quite often. I don't know whether she's really an alcoholic or not. She's long dead now, and it really doesn't make any difference. Until I was 10 years old and my mother remarried, and she married a full-blown alcoholic, and that's when our household turned into a real alcoholic household. And I don't know how many of you come from a deal like that, but it's a bad deal. This guy was a bad drunk and a vicious drunk, a violent drunk. It was a real bad deal. And him and my mom were drinking together. It was real bad. One of them were drinking, the other one wasn't. Didn't seem to be quite as bad. But I can remember many, many nights laying in bed and maybe at the little tavern up the street and drinking. And I'm laying in bed waiting for him to come home. Because as soon as they come home, the war's going to start. It always did. And I'm laying in bed. I'm kind of in a twilight sleep. I'm not quite asleep. I'm not quite awake. And waiting there, and as soon as that front door opens and shuts, my eyes pop open, and I just wait for the war to start, and it will. And they'd come in, and they'd be downstairs in the kitchen and be drinking and talking, and then the talk would get a little louder, and the fight would break out. And as I say, it just always did. And all the sounds and stuff that go on in those households, and the screaming, and the cursing, and the accusations, and this guy starts attacking my mother. You know, and many times I used to paint this picture of my stepfather, and it was accurate, and he's a bad guy, he was a bad guy, and But to be honest with you, my mother was bad. I mean, I'd be up there laying in bed, and she'd be just like egging him on, and she's drunk up, and I'd be thinking, Mom, shut up, for Christ's sake, you know, I mean. And she was just a little 4-foot-nothing bandy rooster, just meaner than hell. And And she'd bring it on a lot. I mean, I hate to admit that. I love my mother dearly, but it was a bad mix there. And the battle had started, and the blood-curdling screams, he's pounding the hell out of her. And I'm a little kid, and I'd run down there to try to defend my mom, and he'd turn on me. And these houses we lived in, they're all row houses. They were all owned by the collieries, the coal companies at one time, and they're very narrow, and so the steps in them are very steep. And he'd be chasing after me, and he'd run after me, and I'm running up those steps, and if this guy catches me, he's going to kill me. He just will. He's crazy, and he's violent. And I run up those steps, and I'd run to the back bathroom. I'd jump out the bathroom window, and I'd get on the back porch roof, and I'd slide down a post, and I'd go stay next door with my friend, or I'd go across the street and spend the night with my friend. And I've heard people in AA come from similar situations and kind of being ashamed to go over and spend the night there and stuff, and I've heard those things, and I wasn't ashamed to go in there, and I'll explain why. I'd go spend the night there, and the next day go home, and the war would be over for a little bit. If it was a work day, he'd go to work, or we'd just kind of settle down for a bit. And the reason I didn't feel bad about going and staying with my friends at his house with a kid across the street is, see, next week his old man will be on a drunk, and he'll be tearing up their house, and he'll come stay with me. See, I didn't come from the token alcoholic family on that block or in that town. I didn't. This little town I come from, it's in the eastern side of Pennsylvania, as I say, the Entresol coal region. In its heyday, it was population about 900 people. It's all first and second generation Irish and German and Lithuanian and Polish and Ukrainian. And they're all hard-working, hard-drinking people. And all the kids I went to school with and hang out with, their old man worked in the same collieries and coal mines as my stepfather. They drank in the same bars and drink shots and beers and get drunked up and go home and tear the house up once in a while. That's just the way it was. And like I said, I never felt like I came from the wrong side of the tracks or the only outkeep. I mean, the battles were going on other places. I heard them. It might have been going on in my house a little bit more. I don't know. But that's just the way it was. And, you know, if both of them were drinking, like I said, it was bad. If one of them weren't drinking, it was. I remember one time my stepfather's out drinking. My mom and I are home watching TV, and we hear him. He's coming home, and he's been gone all day, so he's going to be pretty drunked up. And he comes in, and she hears him coming up the front steps, and she said, "Ray, just be quiet. Don't say anything." Okay, and he comes in, and he's trying to pick a fight with us, and we ignore him. We act like he's invisible. He don't like that. So he goes down the cellar, and he comes up in the cellar with a sledgehammer, and he puts that right through the television set. Bam, man. He hits that thing, and it explodes, and gases fly all over, and glass, and he just beats it to a rubble. It's a pile of rubble when he's done with it. And with all the craziness in that household that went on, busted furniture, and the fights, and the shotguns, and all the craziness that went on, I don't ever remember having any conscious thought of thinking, I'll never drink, or drinking's a bad deal. I never. I remember thinking, I'll never get married. That seemed to be the problem, you know. Everything was okay till she married that son of a bitch. Booze ain't the problem. He's the problem. We had booze before he came. He is the problem. And I started going on drinking at every opportunity when I was about 14 or 15 years old. Like I said, I did all that kid experimental drinking in my hometown. As kids, we'd run around to weddings and wakes and different things and sneak drinks and get drunk. And I got drunk many, many times. And as I say, I just look at that as kind of experimental kid drinking. I started going out to get loaded on a regular basis at about 14 or 15 years old. And I went out and got loaded on a regular basis from the time I was 14 or 15 years old till I was 32 years old and came to Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not going to stand here and tell you that was a rotten 17, 18 years. I love to drink and I love to get loaded. It was my favorite thing to do and I had a good time with it for a long time. I got a lot of jams and jackpots, but if you want to play, you got to pay. I live by that philosophy then, still do today. You play, you pay. If you're going to be drunk like me, things are going to happen. You're going to get wrecked cars and 502s and lose families. All that stuff happens. You know, that's what's going to happen. You know, I'm a drunk, and I'm just kind of your garden variety drunk. I like drunks. I like sober drunks, and I like wet drunks. I don't like people that don't drink. If there's any Al-Anons here that don't drink, for Christ's sakes, don't take it personal. I mean, usually there is, and at that, they're thanking me. They'll say, "Oh, I'm an Al-Anon. Yeah, I don't drink. You don't like me." Oh, Jesus. You're right. You know, years ago, a long, long time ago, 30-some years ago, Gene Martin had a television program. He had a line on it I've never forgotten. He said, "I feel sorry for people that don't drink. When they get up in the morning, that's as good as they're going to feel all day long." That's a great line. And I like drunks. I was a barroom drunk. My wife that I'm married to in Alcoholics Anonymous, she spent a lot of her last years of drinking sitting at home in a black beanbag chair with a bottle of Jack Daniels. That ain't my style of drinking. I love the bars. I love the people in the bars, the music in the bars, any kind of bars. Beer bars, cocktail bars, nice bars, scummy bars, bowling alley bars, Ambets bars, VFW bars, Eagles bars, Elks bars. I love bars. Love the great fellowship there, you know. years and years ago, my sponsor, Johnny, his first sponsor, Norm, used to say, he had a great line. He said, I don't think home drinkers ever really reached their full potential. I used to love to hear that one. He used to say, who can you impress at home, you know? But I love it. I came to Alcoholics and I was convinced that I was just a pure drunk and a pure juicer, and I am to your garden variety drunk, as they say. But my recipe for life was booze and Bennies. Never took Bennies to get loaded on. I took them to drink more. I mean, I love Bennies. I took Bennies where those big white crosses, big cross tops. So, as you can see, I'm kind of hyper on the Natch. I mean, me and Bennies, I'm a nutcase. I mean, you know. And my wife, her deal is Reds and Jack Daniels. We'd have never got along. She'd be nodding off, I want to talk some more, you know. And I just loved it. Like I said, I never took Bennies to get loaded on. I'm going on a 4-day drunk. I don't want to miss a lick. And I just love being up and going and let's go and get it on. For many, many years, I worked as a manufacturer's representative salesman in the consumer electronics business, and was in that business for 30-some years up until a couple of years ago. And I had a job working for a company out in the San Fernando Valley, and they called me in one Monday and fired me. And I couldn't believe it. Because I was the best salesman they had. I really was. I mean, it was basically a draw against us, a commission job, and I was making more money than anybody else, which means I had to be selling more than anybody else. And if there's awards to be won, I'm winning most of them. And I'm good. I'm good at what I do. And when I work hard. And they called me in and fired me. They never fired me for showing up on that job drunk, because I never showed up there drunk. And they didn't fire me for showing up at a customer's drunk. I never showed up at a customer's drunk. But we used to have sales meetings there on Monday mornings, and we'd be on the road the rest of the week. And I used to show up there for sales meetings early Monday mornings, and I'd show up at customers early in the morning, awfully hungover. If you're not careful, that can look and smell like drunkenness. Be very, very, very careful about that. I remember I was going to work with a sales manager who was in town from New York, one of the companies we represented, and this is near the end of my drinking, and near the end of my drinking, my drink is out of control. I'm paraphrasing basically kind of what it says in chapter 3. I'd lost the ability to control and enjoy my drinking. It was out of control and enjoyment was gone. And it was like that for, I don't know, 4 or 5 or 6 years near the end of my drinking. And I don't know if that ever happened to you, but you ever get drunk by accident? I get drunk by accident a lot. I'm on my way home. I'm supposed to work with this sales manager this one particular day, and I had a rough day, and I'm on my way home, and I need a drink just to kind of relax a little. But I thought it through. I don't go running into the bar and drink. You got to have this drink. And I thought it through. I got to beat that guy tomorrow. I got to be on my best behavior. I got to watch it. And I thought it through a little bit. And I thought, well, I'll go in this beer bar. I'll go in and have a couple of beers, shoot a game, pull with the guys on wine, relax a little, and go home. That's my plan. Before I know it, it's 2 o'clock in the morning, and they're throwing me out. I ain't in the beer bar. I'm across the street at the cocktail bar now. I'm drinking over there. And it's 2 in the morning, and I got drunk when I don't want to get drunk. And I'm getting drunk by accident. Lost the ability to control. And at the end of my drinking, I took a drunk. That's the way it was. And I don't know how it is for you. And then the next day I get up, and because I always went to work. I always showed up. I need the paycheck. There's no way honor in it. I need the dough. It's that simple. And I get up the next morning, and I used to get awful, awful hangovers. I mean, I don't hear people in AA talk too much about it, but I got nasty, just violently ill hangovers. Sick. I get up the next morning and I am sick. I'm going to meet this guy at 7 o'clock and I'm up at 5:30. And get up, my head is pounding, and I spent my drinking career at, you know, in fact, you know, only in Alcoholics Anonymous do they call drinking a career. You ever notice that? I mean, that's sick if you think about it. If you first read the book like that, a drinking career, sick. Anyway, but I spent my whole time looking for a cure for hangovers. I mean, all the, you know, drinking olive oil and all the stuff that just trying to, not drinking ain't one of the cures, you know. But I used to take lots of showers. I thought I could wash them away, I guess. And I get up that morning and I'm sick and I'm hungover and I get in the shower and I shower and get all nice and clean and shampoo my hair and get out and Q-tip every orifice in my body. You know? I mean, I get clean. And I stand in front of that counter in the bathroom like I did time and time and time and time again to try to get well, to be presentable, get out there and do it. And I got a splitting headache and my head is pounding so bad I think I'm out of a cerebral hemorrhage and it's just violent. And I get the aspirin out and I get 3 or 4 aspirin. And I still take 3 or 4. Does anybody take 2 aspirin? I still take 3 or 4 aspirin today. 2 is good, 4 is better, you know. and I get three or four aspirin, and I'm a great thinker and a great figure outer of things. I like to softer easier way and everything, and rather than take it with water, I get a fix of bromo, wash it down with a bromo. You get two things cooking for you right there, and wop down those aspirin and take a big slug of this bromo and get it down. And then I get the murine out and try to get the murine in my eyes and clear up my eyes and get that thing done with. And I don't know how it is for you, but the big test for me in the morning is try to get my teeth brushed. Now, if you're a drunk like I'm a drunk and you got a hangover like I do and you get that toothpaste on the toothbrush and you get it in your mouth and you get that sweet peppermint taste there, what it does is gag me. Gag me big time. And I gag and I get the dry heave. And I get the dry heaves and I'm dry heaving and nothing's coming out because I don't have anything in there. You see, when I drink, I drink. I don't eat. I don't drink and eat. I don't want to get those mixed up. I remember I'd be out there drinking it. Some guys always, hey, let's go get something to eat. And I think, and I swear to God, I think it through, and it was always economics for me. I think, you know, I got about a half a hundred invested in this Buzz here and a two-bit hamburger to dull it out just like that, you know. And I don't want to take a chance on it. But when I drank, and I eat, but I don't get them tied up. And I'm dry heaving, and there's nothing coming out. All that might be coming out is the bar foods, which are the pea foods. Peanuts, popcorn, pretzels, potato chips, pepperonis, pickled eggs, pickled pig's feet. That's all. I think it's a law. You can only sell stuff, food that begins with letter P in bars, you know. And that's all that might be flying out there, you know, a little, some popcorns or pretzels or peanuts. And I puked all the time. I mean, all the time. I'm a professional puker. Before I left Pennsylvania, I had a bad wreck. I left Pennsylvania at 18 years old. Before I left there, I went to a, those of you from the East Coast, I went to a clam bake. And the East Coast had clam bakes. They're great. Put on by all the fraternal organizations, Elks and Eagles and what have you. Anyway, went to a clam bake. It was like a bucket ticket, and you could have all the steam clams you wanted and all the beer you could drink. I mean, they were great. They're out in the grove somewhere. Anyway, I went to this clam bake. It was either in Wilkes-Barre or Berwick, Pennsylvania. And I got all drunk up there, and I'm on my way home, and I have a bad car. I hit a Greyhound bus head-on. Bad wreck. It was a bad deal. And in the wreck, I broke some ribs. I broke my jaw on both sides, and the guy who was with me got hurt real bad. It was just kind of a mess. And I had every bone in my body broken at one time or another, but broken jaw is a bad deal. It really is. And they get me in the hospital, and they fix it by wiring your mouth shut. Those of you who have broken jaws, well, you get your mouth is wired shut. And the doctor is getting ready to let me go, and he said, okay, got to keep this on here 6-8 weeks, he said, till it heals. And he said, two things you hope don't happen. Hope that you don't get a toothache. Hope you don't get sick. And as soon as I get out of the hospital, I go meet my friends, and I go to the bar. No shit. And I'm in the bar, and now I've been in the hospital a week, and I got food in me. I mean, you know, and I'm drinking, and I can feel it coming. You know, it's like your mouth gets watery, you know, you get that spit taste in your mouth. And I think, oh, man, I'm going to die. I'm just going to die. And I can't hold it anymore, and I go run into the back door of that bar, and I go outside, and it comes, it's about like a sprinkler system, you know. Look at the faces between my teeth, and it's just squirting out there, you know. Anything solid, whole front of the corner, blasting out my nose, you know, and just bam. I got a dope clean friend in Alcoholics Anonymous. He talked about snorting coke and sandblasting inside of his nose. I said, you don't know what a sore nose is like to have whole kernels of corn blasting out of it. I said, that'll give you a sore nose. And I'm just, food's blasting out there, and I'm puking, and it's backing up my mouth, and I got to swallow it again, and it's just a mess. What the hell's the matter with you? Didn't you ever puke, for Christ's sake? God damn it. That's when I was having fun. That's when it was real. And you know, and I puke all the time. I just puke. I mean, and it's because I drink a lot. My body is just rejecting that stuff. It's just. I drink and drink and drink and drink, and it's just rejecting it. So my body is saving my life. Really, it really is. Puking that stuff out, rejecting it. Anyway, that morning I get up and I go through a puke, and then I get the Listerine and I got to swish it around and I get that puke taste and smell out of my mouth, and I shave and get as good a condition as you can get in, I guess. And I get fresh clothes on, and I go meet this guy, the sales manager, and I'm there and I'm on time and I'm ready, and I greet him. And as I'm shaking his hand, I'm greeting him. I'm shaking his hand and he's looking at me funny. And if you're an alcoholic like I'm an alcoholic, you've seen the look. Wives, mothers, kids, bosses, I don't know, whatever, you've seen it. Because it's kind of a quizzical, disgusted look with this guy. And he's shaking my hand, and we had met before, and he said, have you been drinking? And I was totally floored. I said, no. And I hadn't been drinking that very morning. What I don't know is this stuff is oozing out my pores, I guess, because he can smell it. And all the urine in the world will clear up my eyes, and I'm all red-faced and puffy and sweating and shaking and stinking. That ain't a bad call for that guy to make, to think that I may have been drinking. I smell like it, I'm shaking, I'm sweating, and I look bad. I mean, that ain't bad. didn't make a bad call on that, and that got reported back to that company. And they don't want people out there representing them like that. And they fired me. And like any good alcoholic, rather than go get another job, a drinking friend and I start our own company. That's what alcoholics do, start corporations. I'm going to put them out of business. They'll come to me for a job, and I'll throw them out. I'll tell them to get the hell out of my office. So I told the guys in the bar that night, they thought it was a slick idea. That company's still in business in San Fernando Valley, doing very well. I think I lasted about 6 months. And anyway, we started this company, and near the end of my drinking, this was in August 1974, and my drinking's out of control. And I don't know what got you to Alcoholics, and I'm going to tell you a lot of what did get me here. 1970, I married my wife in 1963. We were married 7 years, and we had two kids in that marriage. I had a son and a daughter, and 1970, she divorced me, left me for the final time. That was number, I don't know, whatever, 12 or something, but the final time. And then a few years after that, she had a drug overdose and died of a cerebral hemorrhage. And I'm not capable of taking care of those kids. Neither do I want to take care of them. I got to tell you that. And my mother-in-law, her mother, is raising my kids in 1974. I'm living in Southgate there in Linwood. And Christmas Eve rolls around 1974, and I got Christmas presents in the trunk of my car for my kids. And I don't know what got you here. I'll tell you a lot of what got me here. I'll tell you a lot of what didn't get me here. I mean, wrecked cars. Look, I wrecked 14 different automobiles. And 4 different 502s don't get me sober. And losing my job don't get me sober. When my wife left me didn't get me sober. And when I get arrested, I got a mouth that won't quit, and the cops beat me up don't get me sober. I don't get sober. I'm described in a big book of Alcoholics in the term self-will run riot. I'm going to do what I'm going to do, and if you don't like it, too bad. I mean, that's just the way I ran my life. But I'll tell you a lot, what did get me here is it's Christmas Eve, and I got Christmas presents in the trunk of my car, like I said, and I'm going across town to bring my kids a Christmas present. I stop in the bar to have a drink, and I take a drink, I take a drunk, and I blow off Christmas Eve. And I wish I could tell you it was the first one, but it wasn't, or the first anything. I've blown everything you can blow off. Christmas, New Year's, birthdays, plays, ball games, parent-teacher meet, you name it, I blew it off. Or if I did show up, I screwed it up and embarrassed them. And Christmas Eve, I blow off, and I come to. I'm awoken the next morning at a phone ring, and my kids are wondering where their presents are. Where's their dad? And I'm feeling bad about that, and I get up and make up another story. And what got me to Alcoholics Anonymous might be perceived by some people to be nickel and dime things. It was nickel and dime lies, and nickel and dime broken promises, and nickel and dime compromises. Not that big stuff. The big stuff really is easy. I mean, you wreck a car, buy a car, for Christ's sake. Lose a job, get a job. Go to jail, do your time or bail, whatever. Lose your wife, get a new one, get a girl, whatever. But nickel and dime broken promises and nickel and dime lies over and over and over and over and over and over. And I could go on and on and on and on. And the booze ain't no fun, and it ain't been fun for a long, long time. And New Year's Eve 1974, I make a New Year's resolution. I got to quit drinking. That's it. And I quit in the first week of January. My partner and I had to go to Chicago to a trade show. And I hadn't had anything to drink for that week. And I meet him at LAX. We check our bags. And Tom said, let's go have a drink, Ray. And I said, I quit drinking, Tom. And he said, oh, come on, man. And he had seen me quit a lot. I quit once a week. Sincerely, he's seen me quit. And I said, no, I haven't had anything since New Year's. And he said, well, come on to the bar with me. And I'd go in the bar with him. And he has a Scotch Rocks. And I had a tomato juice. We discussed the business we're going to do when we get to Chicago. And we go back to get our boarding passes. And the flight run was oversold. They bumped us in the first class, and I'd never flown in first class before, and I'd never flown in first class since. It was the one and only time. We take off, and they start serving the drinks, and Tom nudges me. He said, hey, man, all the drinks are free. Now, I don't know about you, but quitting drinking and quitting free ones is two different deals altogether. Two totally separate issues. And like I said, I'm a smart guy. I'm a great figure-outer of things. I'm a great schemer. And I figured out I ordered B&B liqueur. Come on. That don't count. And I rationalized anything in this sick head of mine. I ordered a B&B liqueur, because B&B liqueur don't count. That beer don't count. Christ, I drank beer when I wasn't drinking. Any of those rum drinks with fruit punch and umbrellas and flowers in them don't count. They're foo-foo drinks. Whiskey counts. Whiskey counts. That's the way I had it sold. And I'm off and running again. And my last drunk was a 4-day drunk like they were towards the end. I come to AA and hear people talk about drinking a fifth a day up to the end, and my hat's off to you, because I couldn't. The best I could do is about a 3 or 4 day run, and I needed a rest. And the way it was for me is I'd start my weekend drinking Thursday night. Now I'd put a half-assed day in Friday, and as an outside salesman, I'd be in the bars by 1 or 2 and get all drunked up Friday, and then Saturday, and then Sunday's my get-well day. I'm going to get well to go to work Monday, because I've been on this run. And I get up come to about noon on Sunday, and I got that dry mouth and the hot pipes, and I go to the refrigerator and get that can of beer, pop that cold can of beer, and just guzzle it down to put that fire out. And I get drunk by accident trying to get well, you see. And by the middle of the afternoon, I'm all drunk up Sunday afternoon. I know I got to go to work tomorrow, and I'm going to be sick. And I get all drunk up and go to work the next day, sick. And then Tuesday, I'm a little better. And Wednesday, I'm over the hump. And Thursday, I started all over again. And that's how my drinking was at the end. Be 4 days drunk and 3 days getting well, and 4 days drunk and 3 days getting well, and just on and on and on. And I just needed that rest in there. I just, I couldn't carry on. And like I say, you know, my last drunk, I'll say something may sound strange. My last drunk wasn't the worst drunk I ever had. I pray to God it's my last drunk, but it wasn't the worst. I had many drunken weekends that should have gotten any sane person into thinking about doing something about their drinking. It never even dawned on me. I pray to God it's my last drunk. I've been sober, by the way, in Alcoholics Anonymous for 7,230 consecutive days of sobriety. So you don't have to sit there dividing 365 into 7,230. My sobriety date is April the 14th of 1975. So I've stayed sober another couple, 3 months. It'll be 20 years. I don't know about you, but that's a long time between drinks for a guy like me. That's with nothing. Nada. Not a puff of a joint, not a pill, not a sip of a beer, nothing. And it's only because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I haven't done anything else. I haven't gone anywhere else. I was brought to, my first meeting in my home group is the Big Book Group in Bellflower. Best AA meeting in the world. Jealousy will get you everything. And that was my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was brought there. And if there's anything good or decent about me today, and there are some good and decent things about me, I'm a product of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I haven't got I haven't expanded my education. I haven't gone and got a degree. I haven't gone to any extra therapy or church. And don't get me wrong. I am not bad rapping any of those things. Anybody that does it, do it. I mean, that's all well and good. I'm saying for me, when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't drank for almost 20 years, and my life is better. Because my life is a lot better. I hear people say, well, my life is different. My life is better. Better. Not just better. Sober and in Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, if you're new here, I'll tell you, you're new like I'm new, you're going to think just because you ain't drink, everything be wonderful. And it ain't going to be that way. Life on life terms is going to happen. It happens to me. It's going to happen to you. It happens to other people. It's tough sometimes. Maintaining continuous sobriety with life on life terms is tough sometimes. 1993 had a tough year. Lost a business. March 31st, 1993, I had a manufacturer's rep company that I started in 1979, and I had a major manufacturer, Japanese company I was representing for almost 15 years. They gave me notice at the end of the year that they wouldn't be renewing my contract, and it was literally putting me out of business, and it did put me out of business. And that first part of that year, my wife's mother, her mom and dad married 53 years, got married in 1940. Lovely people. Lovely, lovely people. And her mom got real sick and found out she had cancer, and it just didn't look real good. And my business closed up March the 31st, 1993, and April the 6th, about a week later, her dad goes home and kills himself and committed suicide. And because he can't seem to handle the fact that she's going to live or die either way. And I'll tell you what it was. He's a nice man, and we talked. I never knew he was that bad, but he was a little bit ashamed because she ran everything there. She paid the bills and stuff, and he didn't know how to do anything, and he was ashamed to tell anybody that. He was ashamed to tell me he didn't know how to write a check. You know, and me and my wife and my daughter went over, and we sat with him and tried to get him going and all that. Never knew he was as bad off as he was, and he just got in his truck in the garage and shut the door and started and went off. And that's a bad day. That's a bad deal. That's a tough deal for my wife. And I liked Bud a lot. He was a great guy. And he loved Alcoholics Anonymous, and he loved the people in AA, and he was grateful for what alcoholics had done for their daughter. Another 2 months after that, I had I'm working on a motorcycle in my garage, and I spilled some gas, and it exploded, and I had burns up all the side. And I'm at Memorial Hospital in Long Beach in the emergency, and her mother's still up in intensive care. And in September of that year, my first sponsored guy who first brought me to Alcoholics Anonymous, Mike Ross, he died. And a lovely man, and gave me the foundation I have in Alcoholics Anonymous. A good guy, and he passed away in September. And November, her mom died. My wife lost my mom and dad in 1 year. That's a tough deal. That's a bad deal. And I've got to tell you something. You know, being in AA didn't make that any easier. I sometimes hear from podiums, I think I miss it, man. I mean, I didn't go through it with dignity and grace. I don't. I scream and holler and bitch and curse and carry on, and it's just tough. And then right at the end of the year, and you may laugh about this, and I really don't care, but when I was about 2 years old, a guy gave me a little dog. And my dog Jasper died. I had him for 17 years. Great, little 25-cent dog. You know, cockapoo maybe. Closest thing you can get. And I loved that dog. I did. And I learned a lot from that dog. I remember when I had him about a year, I came home one day, and he had been out in the patio all day, chewing up all the stuffing from all the patio furniture. He thought this was a good deal. He was very proud of it. And I came home, and all that cotton stuffing was pulled out of all the chaise lounges and stuff, and it was all over the place. It was in his ears and up his nose and all over. And I came home, and he comes dancing up to the wall. Hey, you're home, man. How you doing? You know? And I look, and I want to kill this son of a bitch. God damn you. And I go in, and I remember when I got the dog, typical day, hey, I got a dog. I was telling him at a meeting, I got a dog. I said, hey, I got a doghouse for you, you know. Typical Alky, he had a German Shepherd doghouse. So I have this big doghouse for this little dog, you know. This big, and Jasper's so scared because I'm crazy. I'm going to kill him if I get him, you know. And he gets in his doghouse and he gets back in the corner. He's shivering back there just thinking, what is wrong with this guy, you know. I'm trying to get in the doghouse at him, you know. And I clean the mess up and I go run some errands. I come back and he comes bounding out of that doghouse and he's glad to see me. Hi, you're home, man. Nice to see you. And I thought, forgive and forget. That dog taught me how to forgive and forget. He's done with it. Hey, it's over, pal. I want to stay mad for another couple of months, you know. Beat him. And it hit me. It just hit me, bang. Forgive and forget. And I started laughing. And I learned that from my dog. I learned unconditional love from my dog. He always loved me, even when I was a jerk. And my dog, and I have other, we still have 3 cats and 2 dogs at home, you know, I mean. But that was a good friend. That was part of the family that died, too. And, you know, that was some tough hands to play. And I say being in AA didn't make it any easier. AA didn't surround the house to keep us sober. You know, like a SWAT team. You know. But I'll tell you what did save my life. In times like that, praying isn't a suggestion that I'll take lightly. I don't want to hear that crap a lot of times. And, you know, my mind hasn't been trained too well here, but my feet have been trained. I kept showing up. And sometimes the only peace I had for that day was an hour and a half at an AA meeting. Because there was no surprises here. There was no surprises here in AA. I knew it was going to happen. I go to meetings, I know the format, and it was just predictable. And I needed predictable. Stability, no surprises. I mean, if it's a speaker meeting, I knew the speaker, and then we do the tradition to collect the money, and I might get in the car and be crazy again. Or even during the meeting, I might drift off and say, oh, man, what's, you know. But I kept showing up. I kept all my commitments, whether it was panels or talk or whatever. I just kept showing up. So I'm a big fan of just showing up. I mean, because I want to sit home and work it out. Oh, man, look out. Get all the women, kids, and dogs off the boulevard if I stay home and work it out. And I just have to keep showing up here. And I said, I used that term of some tough hands to play. I was talking to the meeting out in Anaheim, and this old timer was there, and after me, he said, tough hands, he said, do you play cards? I said, yeah, I play cards. He said, yeah, he said, life's kind of like a poker game. God's dealing, and he deals out cards, and you get some bad hand once in a while. And you say, hey, God, it's a bad hand. And God looks at you and says, be glad you're in the game, Slick. That's how it is for me. I'm glad I'm in the game, you know. And God didn't do that stuff to my wife or I. My wife is 15-year sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. At the time, I'm 18 years sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. And God didn't do it. He didn't do it to test me. I hear that sometimes. I hear God is given for credit he has nothing to do with here, and he's blamed for stuff he has nothing to do with, in my humble opinion. He says, I got the podium, I'll give you my humble opinion. He didn't do it to me. What God did is he gave me the strength to stay sober through it all, to walk through it sober and relatively sane, you know. So I'll tell you what they told me. They said, if I want to stay sober, along with being sober, be happy and comfortable. Sober all the time. Happy and comfortable, just most of the time. There were things required of me, and they're demanded of me, actually, in Alcoholics Anonymous. Told me how to stay close to the people of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all my friends there are sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous. Told me to attend meetings on a regular basis, and told me to go to 90 meetings in 90 days, and I did that. And if you knew, I suggest that. It's a good beginning foundation. And today I have a commitment of 3 meetings a week. I have a Monday night commitment, a Wednesday night commitment, and a Friday night commitment. And if I wasn't here tonight, I'd be at my book study that I go to on Wednesday nights. And those 3 committed meetings, along with others that come along, I'm generally at 4 or 5 meetings a week, and that keeps me comfortable. For me. Told me to read the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it was given to me when I was new, and I read it like every newcomer, and I put it away. And it's not a novel to be read, it's a textbook to be studied. I didn't know that. I put it away. And I don't know about you, but I go to work and come home and coming home eating supper and curling up in the corner with the big book never sounds like a slick idea to me. It just don't. And I don't do it. So for me, I need the discipline and the structure of an AA meeting. So the meeting I go to on Wednesday nights is a book study meeting. We started in July of 75 at a little house right down the street on Oak Street down from our Monday night meeting. And it grew into a fairly big book study meeting. And we have it every Wednesday night. And we studied the book. And I need that to study the book like I'm supposed to. For me, I need meetings to do those things. And I told me if I did those things and worked the steps, I'd find a God of my very own. And I have found a God of my very own. I wish for you sobriety. I wish for you a God like I have found in Alcoholics Anonymous. Not the God that I thought I learned about in the Catholic Church. And I'll tell you what sounds surprising to me today, and it may surprise you, is that the God I learned about in the Catholic Church and parochial school and when I was an altar boy and so on is one and the same. Took me a long time in Alcoholics Anonymous to find that out. And it's a comfort. I don't go to church. I have no desire to go to church. But it's one and the same. There's no beef there. I don't Catholic bash. But it's one and the same. And he loves me and I love him, and it's a good deal. And you know, I came here because I remember I was talking at a meeting one time. A guy says, a newcomer came up after the meeting and he said, you know, you said your last drunk wasn't that bad. He said, if it wasn't that bad, why'd you go to AA? That's a good question. That's a guy who was paying attention, you know. And I thought about it a little bit, and I thought, you know, the answer is very simple. I'm just tired out. That's it. I'm tired out. I'm just plumb tuckered out. I just can't do it no more. And that's the truth. And the reasons I stay here is very simple. This is a good deal. And I like good deals. And I promise you, if you stay here and do the things, you'll never have to drink again. But more importantly, they told me, I do those things not because I don't want to drink again. I never want to sober up again. Sobering up is tough. Tough, tough, tough. Because this sick alcoholic head of mine, can make the front side of a drunk look good. Still today. Crazy. But I never, ever want to sober up again. And I promise you, if you stay close to people, attend the meetings, read the book, work the steps, find the God of your own, work with some newcomers, you'll never have to sober up again either. I want to thank you guys for having me, and I'll be back. Thank you.